We're holding Nein Yaakov. We're learning the different Midrashim and Agadot of the Talmud. And we had a few classes introducing this, discussing both the history of Nein Yaakov and the importance of the Midrashim and Agadot and their incorporation in the Talmud and as part of our oral history, which was eventually written down, our oral tradition. Not our oral history, our oral tradition. We're going through the Midrashim and Nein Yaakov, and we'll just remind ourselves of a few of the points we made about the importance of the stories that the Talmud gives us. And we discussed that on the surface, the stories help us with Yirat Shamayim. A story can convey a message which a lot of philosophy cannot. And a story speaks to us on a level that all the logic in the world cannot. it's been this way throughout all of known history. People were interested in stories. And stories were able to get people to understand concepts and connect with concepts where logic could not. And so on the surface, the stories have a very important role. They also have an important role in that when we get bogged down with the day-to-day, we tend to get caught up with the small problems of life. And the story can sometimes take us out of the perspective we have and move us up a level, give us a broader perspective, and sometimes a totally different perspective. And there's a famous story about a Hasidic Rebbe who they hired a new teacher for the elementary school, and the teacher was of the new age. This was in the 19th century. And he said, I'll teach the children, but I'll teach them things that make sense. And I won't tell them the stories. I won't tell them the extraordinary stories. And the Rebbe said, we can't have him teaching the children. Because one of the things that really speak to us are the things that are extraordinary. On the one hand, they speak to us the same way they spoke to us when we were 5 years old. And on the other hand, we have to remember that we're no longer 5 years old. And we cannot remain with the understanding that we had when we were 5 years old. We've often mentioned the story about the woman who comes to synagogue after years that she hasn't attended, and she comes in and they're reading in the Torah. And she asks the woman sitting next to her, psst, what are they reading about? And the woman tells her, it's the story about Joseph. There were 12 brothers. And she tells her about all the enmity, the hatred that developed between the brothers and how the brothers ultimately sold him as a slave. Naked, they sold him down to Egypt to be a slave. And the woman hears the story and she starts weeping. And as she hears all the details, really touches her heart, and she's really weeping, and she leaves shul. Another year passes, and she shows up a year later. She shows up to the same synagogue, takes the same seat. It happens to be the same week, and she turns to the woman next to her, and she says, psst, what are they reading about? And the woman starts telling her the story all over again, and she tells her about Yosef and the brothers and how they sold him and all the hatred. They sold him naked, and the woman sitting there stiff as a stone, no reaction. So after she finishes the story, she feels like, hey, what did I do wrong? She asked the woman, she says, last year you were crying when you heard this story. This year, I see no reaction. What happened? So the woman says, you know what? Last year I felt really bad for him. But if this guy was foolish enough to do it all over again this year, I don't feel bad for him. So if we approach the stories of Tanakh or the stories of the Talmud and we're just reading them again, and it's just the same Yosef that's being sold, then there's something wrong with us. Because we're supposed to have evolved during this year, and when we encounter the Tanakh again, it can't be the same person that's encountering the Tanakh. We're supposed to be a different person. We're supposed to have matured, we're supposed to have grown, and we're supposed to have insights. There was a man who once came into yeshiva, and he heard they wanted him to donate to support the yeshiva, and he sees the guy's learning. He says, what you're learning? He says, El Matzis. So he says, El Matzis, when I was in fifth grade, I learned that. These people are mature adults. That's what they're learning. It's a pity. But sometimes we remain with our understanding of fifth grade or third grade or less, and we forget that there's a deeper understanding. Now, we are slightly limited in this class, limited in time. It's once a week. And we do try to cover ground. And one of our main goals in this class is to cover the stories on their simple level. That being said, we have to remember that there is a deeper level. We can't walk away from this class with the feeling that all the stories we're going to learn about all kinds of fascinating things, and we can't walk away with the thought that the understanding that we've gleaned in this class is that's as far as it goes. There's much more depth, which we won't get to explore. We'll try to dabble here and there and try to get a taste of it, but our primary goal is really to cover it on the surface. To get that simple under, just to be acquainted with the stories. But we have to keep reminding ourselves that there's more to it than that. And I'm going to throw those comments as we go along. When you hear me say whatever that means that there's got to be more meaning to it than what the simple meaning is, even though we'll translate it simply. Now, in the past weeks, I photocopied the pages, but being that we cover quite a few pages each class, it's becoming a little bit expensive on the Machon to photocopy each time 4 or 5 pages. So those who want the text can purchase it, and I'm going to talk to our listeners and see if we could arrange to get a few copies of the text for those who are interested. We'll see how many people are interested. So for now, I have the text, and those of you who want, is there anyone that wants text before? No, that was the impression I got. Okay, so I'll read and translate, and I guess whoever wants to will let me know, and then we'll try to arrange them a copy of the text. We're in the Gemara in Brachos. We're holding Daf Dalid. And the Gemara is about to discuss a verse in Tehillim chapter 86. Tehillim Pei Vav. And David HaMelech here turns to his creator and says, Le David, this is a psalm composed by King David. And this is after the first two books of Psalms are finished. We know Psalms was divided into a few books. The first two were sealed. And now, in the third book, David HaMelech begins... David HaMelech begins this chapter saying, Shamira nafshi, please protect my nefesh, ki chasid ani, for I am an extra pious person. So he's turning to his creator and saying, I was a chasid, I was an extra pious person, and please protect my nefesh. And the question is, what is David talking about? Rabbi Levi and Rabbi Yitzchak, we have two Amoraim, and they have two different opinions as to what King David's claim was before his creator. Chagamal, one said, Kach amal David lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is what David said before God. Ribono shel Olam, Master of the World. Lo chasid ani, aren't I a righteous, pious person? Shekol malchei mizrach u'ma'arav yishanim ad gimel shot. All the kings of the east and the west, they sleep the 3 hours in the day. They wake up at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. They don't wake up early. Vani and I, chatzot laila akum lo'odot lecha, I awaken at midnight to praise you, God. Aren't I a pious person? The Idach, another one says that this was King David's claim. Kach amal David lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is what King David said before God. Ribono shel Olam, Master of the World. Lo chasid ani, aren't I a pious person? Shekol malchei mizrach u'ma'arav, all other kings of the east and west, yoshvim agudot agudot lichvodam. They sit around and glean honor. Vani adayim luchlachot bedam u'vishvil u'vishilya. And I get my hands dirty when I have to give halachic ruling kedei leter isha lebaala, to find a woman pure for her husband. What are we talking about here? So there are a few understandings as to what the conversation is. The first thing that probably bothers us when we read this Gemara is, how does a person stand and say, I'm a pious person? And we have to remind ourselves that there's a difference between when we talk among ourselves and when we talk to our Creator. When I'm talking to someone else, if I say, look, I'm a pious person, what am I saying? I'm saying, you don't know how valuable I am. And you should recognize what a wonderful person I am and give me more honor. I'm taking pride. And about that, King Solomon taught us, Yehalelcha zal velo ficha. Let others praise you. Don't let your own mouth praise yourself. A person should never be the one to praise himself. If you're worthy of praise, others will praise you. But when we're talking to our Creator, I'm not going to tell God anything He doesn't know. So I might have to make claims. That's the whole concept of prayer. That God says, if you want something, talk to me. God knows what I want, but God says, yes, if it's important enough for you, then figure out a good claim, and I'll allow you the possibility of making changes in heaven by the fact that you connect with heaven. If you'll connect and recognize that I run the world in your prayer, so then fine, then I'll, you give that recognition, then I'll help you with the way I run the world. But I'm not telling God something He doesn't know. What am I doing? I'm saying, even though you know this, I'm going to express this, and part of my expression is what I want, what I need, and part of it is by what merit do I want it. So that's the simplest understanding, that David the Melech was turning to God and saying, look God, you know that every other kings, what are kings busy doing? Taking honor. They sleep late. They enjoy the amenities of being a king. And what do? I get out of bed early. By midnight, I'm up giving you honor. God, you recognize, you see, I am more interested in giving you honor than taking honor for myself. I'm not interested in the passing, fleeting honor that mankind gives. My interest in this world is to serve you, and therefore I get up at midnight. I'd also enjoy sleeping late, but I don't. So you see, I'm coming and I'm doing my best, so please forgive me. What is David talking about? So according to this understanding, this psalm was said after he sinned with Bathsheba, and after he sinned by causing the death of Uriah, Bathsheba's husband. And after he had these two sins, he's turning to God and he's saying, God, let's review the slate. I messed up on two things, and I messed up big time. But in general, day to day, I am a chassid. On my day to day, everything I've done is good. I had a downfall, and I had two sins that are on my slate. But let's look at the global picture. Every night, I get up at midnight to praise you. I'm not spending my life seeking material things. Quite the contrary. I'm in a position where I could get everything material, and I don't take advantage of that. I don't even allow myself the basic enjoyment that the average person gets from sleeping a good night's sleep. By midnight, I've been up praising you. Every night at midnight, I've been getting up. So God, please, take the big picture that I've been pious before you in general. And don't take those two sins and say, that'll bring me down. Recognize that the general picture is that I was pious. I was a chassid. The other understanding says that David had something better to claim to God when he sinned with Bathsheba. David said, what do people seek in this world? More than physical pleasures, people seek the lowest level of spiritual pleasure, they seek honor. The philosophers once have used to claim that the greatest person there is needs spiritual nourishment, which the philosophers called, that was their nickname for honor. Even the greatest person needs that spiritual nourishment. Every person needs to feel valued. When a person is king, usually he spends his time with his officers, spends his time with other kings. If he'll ever go down and judge the people, what does he judge them on? He says, if it's an important case, it's a case where we'll administer the death penalty, that's when he shows on the scene. But he doesn't busy himself with the problems of the small person. David HaMelech said, we have laws of family purity, where a woman, God forbid, a woman miscarries. So we have a tradition at which point we can analyze the fetus that comes out, and when we treat it as a baby that passed, and when we treat it as not a baby that passed, and there are halachic ramifications when this woman's going to be pure for her home or not. And David HaMelech said, you know, that requires taking the fetus in your hand, looking at a fetus, which isn't something very pleasant. It's getting your hands bloody and dirty, and then applying the tradition that we have. Well, I have a very strong tradition. And I didn't take advantage of the fact that I was king and sit there and enjoy the amenities of being king. No. I went down and judged, and I not only judged, but I judged the cases that are less pleasant to judge. I judged the cases where I had to actually get my hands dirty. I didn't treat myself like a king, I treated myself like a pauper. A king would stay in bed till 3 hours in the day. I got up early to praise you. Like a person who gets up early to do his job. I didn't sit with honor like other kings, but I rather went and dealt with the day-to-day simple things, difficult things, things that got my hand dirty as though I need to make a living. I didn't take advantage of my position as king. And therefore, God, take that big picture into account when you judge me, and don't judge me just on the two sins, which were major sins, but forgive me for them. I was punished for them. There's a third understanding here that says that David HaMelech in this whole chapter prays to God about how he judges the people. And he says, God, I get up in the middle of the night, and that's a time when ordinarily a person's sleeping and you watch over him. Don't let me sin now when I get up in order to serve you. Help me. This thing, what did I do? I got up early in order to serve you? Well, you know what? A guy gets up at midnight. There's the internet. He could do 1,000 things that are improper. He'll end up sinning. David says, God, please, I got up to praise you. Help me. You see the pious action that I did? Help me in this action that I won't sin. And the other understanding says, David HaMelech said, I got up early in order to judge your people right. And I do my best to give the most lenient ruling to help your people out. So help me in this act that I don't sin. Chassidani, David HaMelech wasn't claiming, I'm a big pious person. David HaMelech was saying, I'm doing an action of piety by getting up early to help the people out and judge them rightly. So help me that I don't sin in that. V'lo od, and David HaMelech says, and maybe someone's going to claim, you know why I do all this? So people speak about me. Look, Rebbe, King David, he's a big rabbi. He comes here to give us halachic ruling. I don't do that. Ela kol ma she'ani oseh, every halachic ruling that I do, ani nimlach b'mfiboshet Rabbi. I ask my Rebbe. So David HaMelech is coming as king. They pose him with the question, and he turns to his Rebbe after he's about to give ruling, and he says, v'omer lo, and I tell my Rebbe, mfiboshet, my Rebbe, yafe danti, did I say right? Imagine that, a king is about to give ruling, and he turns to his Rebbe, and he says, Rebbe, am I right? In front of everyone, before he gives ruling, that's what David would do. Before he'd give ruling, this one's obligated, this one's free, he'd ask his Rebbe, I wasn't embarrassed. I said, the most important thing is the honor of God. The most important thing is that I give correct ruling. And therefore, I asked my Rebbe before I gave ruling. So, David HaMelech is backing it up. He's saying, and don't say I got up early so that people would give me honor. Yeah?
Who was the Rebbe of David HaMelech?
David HaMelech had a few Rebbeim, but Mephibosheth was a person who was very, very smart. And that's why he was called Mephibosheth. The Gemara is about to say, Amar Rabbi Yoshua b'Rei d'Ravidi me'ikra, Rabbi Yoshua, the son of Ravidi, says, what's the source for this? David HaMelech says, v'adabra v'edotecha neged melachim v'lo yivosh. I spoke about your rules, your testimonies, the mitzvot that are testimony before kings, and I wasn't embarrassed to ask my Rebbe. Tana, we have a Tana, I quote, lo mefiboshet shmo, his real name was not Mefiboshet, ela Ishboshet shmo. This Rebbe of David's, his name was Ishboshet. V'lama nikra shmo Mefiboshet? Why was he nicknamed Mefiboshet? Shaya mevayesh pnei David ba'alacha. Because he used to embarrass David in halacha. David would want to give ruling, and he'd turn to his Rebbe and ask him, did I say right? And he'd say, no. And that's why it was called Mefiboshet. Mipi, from the mouth of this man, was Boshet, was shame to David. Now David HaMelech, look at that modesty. He's willing to stand in front of everyone and ask his Rebbe. Lefichach, therefore, Zachah David merited the Atzami Menuchilav. He had a grandson or son named, he had a son named Kilav. V'amar Rabbi Yoshua, and Rabbi Yoshua told us, lo Kilav Shmo, really his name wasn't Kilav, ela Daniel. This son of David's was called Daniel. V'lama nikra Shmo Chilav, and why was he nicknamed Chilav? Because the word Chilav, Chil comes from Klima, shame. And Av means a father. And this son of David's was so smart, he was smarter than his father David, and he was smarter than his father's Rebbe Mefiboshet. So, this son of David, Shayam Chlint named Fibosh Balacha, he could sit there, and Mefiboshet would say something in Halacha, and David's son, this little boy, would turn up and say, nope, and he'd be right. And that's why he was nicknamed Kil Av. Shame to the father. He'd give shame to the one who, until his time, was considered a father in halacha. Shaya machmim name fiboshet b'alacha. He used to shame mefiboshet in halacha. So because David allowed himself to be shamed in halacha, God gave him the merit to have a son who would outsmart his Rebbe Ishboshet. V'alav amar Shlomo b'chokhmaton, about him King Solomon said in his wisdom in Proverbs, Beni, my son, im chacham libecha, if your heart was wise, yismach libi gamani, then my heart is going to be gladdened. V'omer, and the verse states, chacham bni, my son was wise, v'samach libi, and my heart was happy. V'ashiva chofi davar, and I was able to respond to the one who shamed me, which is a reference to Mefiboshet, who shamed Shlomo's father. Yeah?
I was just going to say that earlier part about, you know, God, you know, I did all these great things, and we don't judge them, these two little things that I did. That was, I mean, President Clinton must have been reading the Talmud because he used the exact same thing that he had impeached. He said the exact same thing. He was quoting from the, you know, from the Bible, saying that, you know, well, don't, okay, I've done all these great things. Don't judge me on these two little things of this Talmud here. He was using the same argument.
I hear.
It's not exactly the same.
I think, though, that this can give us a lot of support. Because David HaMelech says, and David HaMelech's claim seems to have validity in the Gemara, that when a person can lead a lifestyle that's good, so then if he has downfalls, he has a claim.
Sure.
Now that doesn't mean that a person should allow himself to fall. But when a person falls, he shouldn't let that wipe his slate. Very often we feel like, if I messed up on this, then I'm not a good person anymore. And that's one of the ways the Yetzer Hara gets us down. And we have to learn from David the Melech to say, no, I'm a good person. I'm a good person who messed up. I'm a good person who had a downfall. I fell, okay, that's part of being a good person. Now I got to get back up.
And a lot of times people are like that. They're willing to give you the benefit of the doubt. If you've led a really good life and you maybe messed up a little bit here, especially like in America, like sports players and stuff.
Here we're talking about God, though. And how could David call himself a pious person? Was David really so confident that he was a pious person? But there's a verse in which King David says, if not for the fact that I believed I would see God in the land of life in the world to come. And our sages have a tradition that whenever there are dots over a word, it's coming to minimize the meaning of the word. Now, we could understand this better if we have a little bit of historical background. It used to be that when you wanted to cross a word out, you wouldn't put a line through the word, you'd put a line above the word. If you see old manuscripts, you'll see that's how they did it. Even in this millennium, in the 13th century, in the 12th century, they were still doing that. That's how they cross out a word. If you wanted to cross it out, you'd put a line over it. So we have places in the Torah, in the Sefer Torah, and in the Nevi'im, in the prophets, and in Ketuvim, in writings, where we have a tradition that there are dots above letters and sometimes dots above a whole word. And those dots usually come to minimize the meaning of the word. And here we have a tradition that when David HaMelech said, if not for the fact that I believe that I will merit the world to come, there are dots over the word if not. And our tradition has it, Betana, we have an oral tradition, Mishmeid Rabbi Yossi, in the name of Rabbi Yossi, Lama Nakuda Lulei, why are there dots over the word if not? Amar David Ifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because what David was really saying before God was, Ribono Shel Olam, Master of the World, Muftachani Becha, I have on faith, Shatam Shalem Sachar Tov LaTzadikim, that you do pay good wages to those that were righteous, LaAtid Lavo, in the world to come. But I don't know if I'm there or not. So David the Melech said, I'm not sure if I'm considered a righteous person or not. That's why he put doubts over those words. So how come in our verse, after he sinned with Bathsheba, he's saying I'm a pious person, and in that verse, David the Melech says, I'm not sure if I'm making it to the world to come. So the Gemara answers, David the Melech thought, Shema yigrom hachet. Maybe his sins had caused him that he wouldn't merit the world to come. When he said the first chapter, he said, I know at this point I merit the world to come. And when he said this chapter, he was already doubtful. Maybe his sins had caused him not to be able to enter. Kid Rabbi Yaakov Baridi, as Rabbi Yaakov Baridi taught us, Rabbi Yaakov Baridi Rami, Rabbi Yaakov Baridi questioned two seemingly contradictory verses. Ktiv, one verse says that God promised Yaakov Avinu, Jacob, when he left his father's house, he told him, V'inenochi imach, I will be with you, Ushmalticha, and I will protect you. Bechol asher telech, in all that you go, so God seems to say, I'll be with you. And then when Yaakov is on his way back home, he's about to encounter Esav, v'chtiv, and it says, v'ira Yaakov meod. Yaakov was very scared. What's he scared for? God promised him, I'll be with you. So Esav's coming, so what?
Maybe
Yaakov?
He's licking something, that's why.
Oh, so that's what the Gemara answers. Amar, why was Yaakov scared? He thought, Shema yigrom hachet. Maybe the sin caused me to lose that promise. God promised me to be with me, but maybe I sinned and I don't deserve it anymore.
So angels come in with him out of the stars to Israel.
Okay, let's finish this for a second and then we'll go back and discuss it with more depth. Kiditanya, as we have another Tanakh quote, when the Jews sang as they left Egypt, they sang in prophecy, right? As Yosha that we say every morning, the Jews sang in prophecy. And one of the verses that they sang was, Ad yavor amcha Hashem, ad yavor am zukanita. Till your nation passes, till your nation that you've acquired passes. So why do they refer to the nation twice? Till they pass twice. So we have a tradition that Ad yavor amcha Hashem, till your nation passes, zubiyarishona. That's the prophecy they had, that the first time they entered the land of Israel, they'd have great miracles entering the land, as they really did. The Jordan split for them. Ad yavor am zukanita, when they said to your nation that you've acquired passes, and they repeated it, zubiyashniyah, that's a reference to the future, almost half a millennium later, 400, 500 years later, when we re-entered the land of Israel with Ezra, Zubiyashnia, that's the second entrance, during the, when we went to re-erect and we were building the second temple, Mikan amru chachamim, from here our sages derived, Duhina Yisrael asot lehem nes bimei Ezra, kederach nasa lehem bimei Yoshua binun. Really, we were fitting, when we entered the second time, to have miracles like the first time. We should have entered the land of Israel with miracles, conquered the land of Israel with miracles. When we entered during the period of the second temple, we should have had miracles just as we had the first time. Ela shegaram achet, but our sins caused that we didn't merit that. Meaning, when we entered in the period of the second temple, we didn't enter under our own sovereignty. We were under the Persian Empire rule. They gave us permission to enter. They gave us the money. They gave us the ability to re-enter the land of Israel and rebuild the second temple. That wasn't the way it was supposed to look. It was supposed to look like the Jewish people walking freely out of Persia, walking with a leader, entering land of Israel, reconquering land of Israel, and being their own sovereign nation. We didn't gain sovereignty till years later. For many, many years, much of the Second Temple, we didn't have sovereignty, both in the beginning and in the end. The fact that we didn't have the miracles of entering land of Israel the second time as we had the first time was because we had sinned. When we were called to enter the land of Israel, many Jews said, we have a good in Chutzarts. We're not interested in entering land. We're not going back. Most of the Jews didn't want to go back. Ezra had to threaten them. The Persian king, Esther's son, Koresh, said, go back. And the Jews said, we have a good out here. Why should we go back there? What are we lacking here? Only those that Ezra could twist their arms, and those that were especially pious, joined. Most of the people who came to the land of Israel were those, the lowest of the society. The elite of the society remained out in Babylon and Persia. They weren't interested in coming back. So that sin caused that we couldn't enter with the force that we should have entered. Now here we have a difficulty. God says that He doesn't lie. God says that He keeps His word. And God also tells us that when He says a prophecy that something good will happen, He never rescinds. Whenever God says a prophecy for good, that prophecy comes true. And the Rambam says that the reasoning behind this is very simple. If a prophet were to come in, like we're going to learn later tonight, Jonah walks into the city of Nineveh and says something bad is going to happen. Jonah walks in and says the city of Nineveh is going to be overturned in 40 days. 40 days pass and the city of Nineveh is not overturned. Is Jonah a liar? No, they've repented. So how can you ever test the prophet if he's truthful or not? Every prophet's going to say, yeah, God said it's going to happen, but then you guys repented, so it didn't happen. So that's why God says, a prophecy for good never goes back. Prophecy for bad does. So if a prophet says that something bad will happen and it doesn't happen, we don't assume he's a liar. We don't know. It's left as a question mark. But if he says a prophecy for good and it doesn't happen, then we know he's a liar.
But what if it's a mixture? If a mixture is... A mixture comes if a prophet says this part will be cursed, that part will stay alive.
The second he said something good, that the example you gave, I don't know. So that's not really a prophecy for good. That's all a prophecy for bad. It's just that some will make it out of the bad. That's not a prophecy for good. But if he said even only partially good, but really good, not just the lack of a negative, but a positive, then he gets tested.
For example,
give me 1 second, I'm sorry. We have another 3 minutes to finish, so maybe we'll discuss this later. The Rambam explains that by Yaakov, God didn't give him a prophecy to tell over to others. God told him, I will be with you. So why was Yaakov fearful? Because that wasn't a prophecy to tell over to others. God sometimes gives a prophet a knowledge. Well, if he's not telling that knowledge over to someone else, then God isn't obligated to this rule that he won't rescind the prophecy for good. The whole reason that God promises us he won't rescind the prophecy for good, explains the Rambam, is that we'll have a way of testing the prophet. Well, if Yaakov just gets a private prophecy, God tells him when he leaves his father's house, I will be with you. And then Yaakov's headed back to the land of Israel. Well, if he sinned, God won't be with him. Another understanding is that when God gives us a prophecy for good, God says, I'll keep my end of the deal. But it's like a doctor telling you, you know, here's the medication. Get 12 hours of sleep a night. Don't go out in the cold. And take this medication, everything will be good. A guy takes the medication, sleeps 3 hours a night, and goes out in the cold, and then he's getting sicker and sicker, and he's about to drop dead, and he calls the doctor and says, you liar. I took the medication, and it didn't work. Well, the doctor says, if you keep your end of the deal, then the medication will work. God says, I'm giving you prophecy for good. You have to keep your end of the deal, though. God tells Yaakov, I will be with you. You'll be okay. What happens if Yaakov jumps off a cliff? Does that mean, a parachute's going to, his yarmulke is going to turn into a parachute? And his pace are going to hold on. No, it's not going to work that way. God says, I told you it'll be good, but you've got to keep your end of the deal. By the same token, if a person is very sinful, if he's done a sin that, so to speak, he's causing the bad to happen, so then that doesn't obligate God. And that's why Yaakov was fearful. And beyond that, maybe we'll discuss next week, but right now we have to run to Arvit.